This podcast is protected by copyright and not for broadcast. See rsn.net.au for more details.
Good morning, everyone. Great to have you company for Talking Horses. On this week's program, we review the Hong Kong racing season with our Australian correspondent who is based there, Andrew Hawkins. Hong Kong is majorly important for our own racing and breeding industry, and two Aussies won the trainers and jockeys premierships this year. No mean feat. Amongst many things, Andrew will bring us the latest on the Hong Kong Jockey Club's new training centre in China, which recently opened up. This will spell huge opportunities in the future for thoroughbred breeders and traders into the region. Also joining us on this morning's show, Vicky Leonard, with the good news that one of the most respected news and information providers, the Thoroughbred Daily News, will be expanding into Australia. Vicky, the former head of marketing for Arrowfield Stud, has also recently branched out on her own and has some bold plans to revolutionise the promotion and presentation of racing. We also catch up with Swettenham Stud Sam Matthews. The Nagambi Nursery is preparing to welcome Highland Reel for the first time next month. Plus, there's plenty of excitement about the progeny of their other headline stallion, Toronado. Sam will also explain what the foal share, whole share concept is all about. That's coming up later. But first, sad news this week with the passing of one of the country's top stallions, Hinchinbrook. In breeding news this week, it was with extreme sadness that Yarraman Park announced the passing of their stallion, Hinchinbrook. He died tragically as a result of a broken hind leg. He was foaled and raised at Yarraman Park and was turning 11 this year. He was at the peak of his career. Harry Mitchell joining us on Talking Horses this morning. Condolences to you, Harry. A real shame.
Yeah, it was a major tragedy for us. Heartbreak, really. Horse was born here and we've had him here all the way through. And, you know, for that to happen at the height of his, you know, just sort of really starting to hit his straps, very sad. Occasionally these things happen.
Yeah, they do. Was it a paddock accident, Harry?
No, what happened was he kicked up over the on the walking machine and it seemed very innocuous. And when he came back down, his leg just cracked and shattered. And then that was it. Unfortunately, it was a very innocuous sort of thing. But, you know, the vets came straight away and he was quite lame quite quickly. And then it was, you know, became very obvious that there was no hope of saving him, which was shocking.
Yeah, very sorry to hear that. It's incredible, isn't it, what can happen with these animals in the blink of an eye?
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you know, he's been on the same walking machine all his life and never had a mark on him. And for that to happen, it just shows your horses, and, you know, unfortunately it can happen. And yeah, you don't know how long you've got them for, so you've got to make the most of it when you do.
Harry, he certainly enjoyed what you've described as a steady rise to sustained commercial success and was fully booked for this spring at a fee of $55,000 after covering previously books of 148 and 129 mares in his past two seasons.
Yeah, look, Joe, he started at a fee of $15,000 and he was slightly overshadowed, I think, because he didn't win a Group 1, although he was second and third in five Group 1s. So it wasn't easy. He wasn't the most fertile horse. You had to restrict his books a little bit, and then he was fine, but we couldn't cover the big numbers. And for him to get two Group 1 winners, and say this year he's had seven group winners and 18 two-year-old winners and a new group one winner. It was, you know, it was all ahead of him. He's obviously, you know, a very, very good stallion.
Well, on to more positive news. So with the upcoming breeding season almost upon us, you'd be looking forward to, of course, I Am Invincible, his participation in that. The son of Invincible Spirit has just gone absolutely gangbusters over the years, hasn't he?
Oh, look, he's been a revelation. I mean, we're very lucky to have him. He's the epitome of what you want in a stallion. He throws, you know, very good horses, very good two-year-olds. They train on till they're older. And, you know, he's a very high percentage horse. His willingness to run is incredible. So, you know, he's sort of the horse we all dream to get, and luckily we've got him.
Mm. And obviously he's been inundated for this season.
Yeah, look, he's full, Joe. We've cut his book back a little bit from previous years because he's rising 14, but he's got the who's who of the brood mares in Australia pretty much. You know, he's got an incredible book of mares.
Mm. And, of course, Hellbent. What's been the reaction to him so far, Harry?
Well, he's been full for quite a long time, so we've stopped his book at 150. Look, he looks magnificent. He's let down really, really well. People who see him really like him. He's a very nice-looking horse. Oh, no, we've been thrilled with the response. We syndicated the horse, so he's got a very strong group of shareholders. So there's actually not a huge amount of noms to sell, but he's been booked out very, very quickly. So, we've been able to sort of handpick the mares a little bit. So he's got a great book of mares this year, Joe.
How's he let down so far?
Oh, look, he looks great. As I said, everyone who's come to look at him likes him. I mean, when he came home from Darren's this time, Darren raced him last prep a little bit lighter than before because he thought it would suit him. And, he really, his last preparation was quite fantastic, the way he won the William Reid and things. The horse looks great. Look, he's 16 hands, a fraction bigger, and he's a lovely colour with a beautiful head. He's a very correct horse. I mean, I don't think many people won't like him, that's for sure.
And what's his temperament like around home?
He's very good, Joe. He used to get a bit G'd up in the mounting yard, but here he's been beautiful. He's quiet. He goes about everything he does very well. And he's been great. No, he's really good.
Can't blame him for being more relaxed. It is a beautiful part of the world. How are things at the farm in general?
Yeah, look, things are good. We're obviously the Hunter Valley and is going through a very, very severe drought at the moment. We're in good shape. We've got, we've got an exciting lot of mares to foal, and the stallions have got very good books of mares. So, you know, other than the heartbreak of Hinchinbrook, everything's really good. That's a tough one, but the rest of the show, everything's going really well.
Mm. Is there any rain on the horizon soon, do you think?
Well, I don't think, not in the next week or so, but it's going to rain soon. It's got to, so... You know, we've got irrigation and things, so we're better off than some people. But it's certainly affecting a lot of people in Australia, this drought. And, it's very tough on a lot of people, I think.
Yeah. Well, Harry, again, commiserations for the tragic passing of Hinchinbrook. And onwards and upwards, the exciting season coming up, and really looking forward to seeing what in the next few years that Hellbent in particular can go on and produce.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. You know, you've got to go on, and as I say, we've got Hellbent now, and, it's all systems go.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
That's Harry Mitchell from Yarraman Park talking to us on the program this morning, the tragic passing of Hinchinbrook, amongst the biggest news in Australian racing and breeding this week. Racing at Flemington yesterday, and the opener was a handicap over 1,400 metres, won by Kieran Mars filly Nantali, a daughter of Rip Van Winkle, out of a Zabeel mare Zalut, related to winners Schwa de Meyer, Dame Van Winkle. She was sold at the 2016 New Zealand Bloodstock Premier Yearling Sales for $180,000. Race 2, the Rising Stars Final, a benchmark 84 over 1,700 metres, won by Lindsay Park Racing's Miles of Krishan, a 5-year-old mare by Snitzel, out of a Gold Bros mare, Nishani. Miles of Krishan is related to winners Another Superior, Captain Bro, Chapelco, Donna Kativa, and Il Quello Veloce, also Jamerica. The third race was a benchmark 90 over 2,500 metres, and Serenade the Stars from the Peter Galagotis team was the winner, a 4-year-old gelding by See the Stars, out of a Bertolini mare, Silent Serenade. Race 4, a benchmark 78 over 1,200 metres. Chris Waller's mare, Overstep, successful. An Exceed and Excel daughter out of an elusive quality mare, Elusive Desire. Overstep is related to winners Eluded and Secret Obsession, and was sold through the 2015 English Australian Easter Yearling Sales for $400,000. The Byerly Handicap over 1,800 metres, won by Kieran Mars' 2-year-old colt, Viseo. He's a son of High Chaparral, out of an Encosta de Lago mare, Villa Mura. and was sold through the 2017 Magic Millions Gold Coast yearling sales for $50,000. Race 6 on the program at Flemington yesterday, a handicap over 1,100 metres, won by Snowden Racing's Brave Song, a three-year-old gelding by Your Song out of a Dr. Fong mare Brave Choice. Winning relations include Gangster's Choice, Miss Severina and More Than Brave. Brave Song was sold through the 2016 edition of the Inglis Classic yearling sale for $67,500. The seventh race on the program yesterday, and that was a mile handicap won by Ken Key's three-year-old gelding, Al Passam. He's a son of Almaher out of a Rubiton mare, Ruby Bree. Winning relations include Ruby Q. Al Passam was sold for $55,000 through the 2016 Inglis Premier Yearling Sale. Race 8, a handicap over 2,000 metres, won by Darren Weir's 60s Groove, a five-year-old gelding by 60s Icon out of an Imperial Dancer mare, Gift Dancer. And Race 9, the last, was the VRC Thanks Terry Bailey Benchmark 90 handicap over 1,000 metres, won by Patrick Payne's Invincible Al, a four-year-old gelding by I Am Invincible out of a Magic Albert mare, Miss Alberta, related to a winner, Duke of Berat. And that's a review of racing at headquarters yesterday. The 2017-18 racing season in Hong Kong has just concluded, and it saw several Australians enjoy stunning success, including Zach Purton, who won the Jockeys Premiership after a hot battle with Joe Moreira, who leaves Hong Kong after this season to take up a contract in Japan. Andrew Hawkins, who is our regular correspondent in Hong Kong, has returned to home shores for some sunshine and fresh air, and he joins us on the program this morning to review the season that was. How are you, Andrew?
Yeah, very well, thank you, Joe. It's very good to be back in Australia at the end of what was quite an intense season in Hong Kong, but it was a memorable season and definitely a lot of highlights throughout the past year.
And the biggest highlight from an Australian perspective was the premiership win of Zach Purton?
Most definitely. I think for anyone who has followed Hong Kong, even from afar, to witness the emergence of Zach Purton, he had won the premiership before. He won it back in 2013-14 when he finally usurped Douglas White, who'd won the previous 13 championships. But I think there was something more special about this win because he beat Joe Moreira at the top of his game. Joe Moreira came in at the middle of that season and had quite a few suspensions, which meant that Zach coasted somewhat to the title in 2013-14. But this year, he really had to fight hard for it. It was an enthralling battle over the final 2 months of the season. Zach got ahead probably about a month out from the season concluding, and he just never gave up that lead. It was something very exciting for us, and I don't think it's possible to understate how big an achievement it was for Zach. He doesn't ride the bottom weight in Hong Kong, which is 113 pounds. Joe Moreira can ride that light, so there's probably 25% of horses that Zach can't ride. Joe's always probably had a better political relationship as well, which Zach hasn't been able to always maintain with some stables, but this year everything's fallen into place, and that achievement, from an Australian perspective, I think it's something that we should all be very proud of.
Absolutely. And Joe Moreira leaving Hong Kong, that's a big void he'll leave.
Yes, definitely. Obviously, he's been a trailblazer, setting record after record in Hong Kong. He's only been there 5 seasons, but what he's managed to do in that time, he's really come through and reshaped the Hong Kong racing scene. It's a void, most definitely, but look, he'll do very well in Japan, and I think that now gives the opportunity for someone else to step up and take that place. Zach will need a rival of some sort. There's always a rival there for the champion. Douglas White had Felix Kutsi at times. He had Brett Preble at times. Zach's obviously had Joe. Joe's had Zach. I think for someone like a Karis Teton, a Chad Schofield, there's definitely an opportunity there to step up and potentially put themselves into the picture as a championship contender.
And there's plenty of other jockey movement. Olivier Deleuze, he finishes up in Hong Kong now. And Brett Preble will be returning to Australia.
Yeah, so two names who've been synonymous with Hong Kong racing for the best part of 2 decades. Olivier has obviously had a lot of success trailing back about 10, 12 years with Good Barber. He is returning to France, as far as I'm aware. He may come back and ride either in Macau or Singapore, but he is finished up in Hong Kong. And the same with Brett. Brett, at the moment, I think, is planning on returning to Australia for a break. I think there'll be some opportunities for him still to have a connection with Hong Kong. I know that there's potentially Lucky Bubbles racing in Japan in September, and I think that Brett, who's obviously been the regular rider of Lucky Bubbles, might get the chance to maintain that association. But I think for Brett, it's now a decision about where he heads next. There'll probably be the same Asian opportunities. He'll obviously have plenty of support if he does go back to Melbourne. But yes, a new era emerging in Hong Kong.
And Tommy Berry returns to the Sydney ranks?
Yeah, Tommy Berry returns. He spent a season in Hong Kong. I think it's been a credit to himself how he's handled himself, because it has been a very tough year for him in Hong Kong. He moved to Hong Kong as John Moore's stable rider. The Moore stable didn't have the success that they usually do have in Hong Kong this season. And Tommy, look, he copped it on the chin. He handled himself very well. And I think he only gained plenty of respect from people around him with the way he conducted himself. But I think coming back to Sydney, he's got obviously a young family. And I think for him, being able to settle in the outskirts of Sydney and ride the Sydney circuit will be something that will probably be more beneficial to him. So it didn't work out in Hong Kong, but I think if he was to move there again in the future, the opportunities would come his way.
And remarkably, John Seitz won his 10th championship this season.
Yeah, 10 championships in 18 seasons is quite the feat, especially in Hong Kong. The handicapping system doesn't usually allow you to be able to have success year on year on year. So for him, that's a phenomenal feat. Only one trainer in the modern era has won more premierships, and that was the late George Moore. So I think there's every chance either next season or the season after that you'll see John emerge on level pegging with George Moore, and that's quite a name to be associated with. Obviously, John was inducted into the Australian Racing Hall of Fame this year, and I think that's given what he's done in Hong Kong, that's a very worthy feat. He's quite a phenomenal horseman.
And in the horse ranks, we saw some really exciting performances, Andrew, from the likes of Pakistan Star, Time Warp, Ba'ai Victory, Mr. Stunning, and Ping Hai Star winning the Hong Kong Derby. And, of course, Highland Reel's performance in winning a second Longines Hong Kong Vase to end his career was one of the memorable moments as well.
Yeah, most definitely. I think Highland Reel's performance in that Vase will be something that we'll always remember for quite some time. Just to be able to see him obviously emerge the way that he did, you know, obviously coming through as a three-year-old, he looked to have all the promise in the world, running third in the Cox Plate, winning the Hong Kong Vase the first time. But what he's been able to do since then was quite memorable. And to end on that high note was fantastic. And obviously behind him in third was Tosin Basil, who I saw midweek has been purchased to head down to Australia. So we'll still see those form lines playing out around the world. But yeah, we've had some phenomenal horses in Hong Kong this year. And I think the most exciting part is that it looks like they're on the cusp of being able to take Hong Kong racing to another level. We've gone through quite a period of transition the last 12 to 18 months. We had a lot of our top horses retire, the likes of Able Friend, Designs on Rome, Blazing Speed. We've seen a lot of horses, Air Velocity in that list as well. So there's been a lot of turnover, but the likes of Ping Hai Star, obviously coming through a Sunshine Coast maiden to take the Hong Kong Derby, the likes of Ai Victory, who rose from Class 2 in one start to become a Group 1 winner and to become Hong Kong's highest rated horse on domestic ratings. It's very exciting for the future, and I think that we're going to see some very exciting racing at top level in Hong Kong next season.
And the Chung Fa Training Centre opened this year.
Yes, it does. The first horses moved up to Chung Fa last week, the first horses in training. There was a batch of retired horses who moved up in the middle of June, but it was, 10 days ago or so, Thursday last week, that the first horses moved up to Chung Fa, who are inside the Hong Kong training system. So very interesting now to see how that plays a part. I was actually up at Chung Fa 10 days ago when Derek Leung and Douglas White rode track work there for the first time. It's the first time anyone had galloped on this turf surface, the first time anyone had used the uphill gallop. And it is a phenomenal training centre. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays a part within the Hong Kong system. It just provides another opportunity for trainers to be able to send their horses to somewhere different. In Hong Kong, you don't have many options. You can send your horses, you can keep them at Sha Tin, you can send them across to Happy Valley. There were limited spelling paddocks up at Bees River near the China border, but the opportunities to actually get into another environment was few and far between. So for Hong Kong trainers, I think it's going to be an asset. So it'll be interesting to see how that comes into play as a new training centre for Hong Kong.
And I see that the club is going to invest Hong Kong $1.5 billion to upgrade the stables at Sha Tin.
Yes, a lot of the stables at Sha Tin haven't had a lot of work since they first opened. Sha Tin first opened in 1978, and a lot of the stables came into being about 1983, 1984, and plenty of them haven't had any work since. There are a couple of stables there that need to be knocked down because they're sinking. Sha Tin was built on reclaimed land, so it's not ideal. It's been a problem that's needed to be addressed for some time. Chung Fa now allows more work to be able to be undertaken at Sha Tin, and I think that only enhances the product available for Hong Kong owners and for Hong Kong trainers.
Okay, that's terrific news. Yeah, much needed upgrades there. What does this all mean then for the future of Hong Kong racing, do you think?
Well, eventually the idea is that Hong Kong racing, the Hong Kong horse population will expand. Currently there's 1,200 horses in Hong Kong, give or take 50 or so for fluctuations throughout the year. But I think the plan at the moment is to get the horse population up towards 1,500 within five seasons. I think that will allow, obviously, more opportunities for owners. At the moment, owners have to go onto a waiting list to be able to get a permit to be able to race a horse in Hong Kong. So it's giving more opportunities for Hong Kong members, Hong Kong Club members and Hong Kong owners to be able to race horses. I think that the plan at the moment, I'm not sure when, but there is plans to have showcase racing at Chung Fa. These will be races where there's no betting, but they'll offer prize money at the same level as in Hong Kong, and it will provide an opportunity to race at Chung Fa, so potentially a step towards mainland racing eventually. But there's exciting avenues now coming out of the Chung Fa Training Centre and also the Sha Tin upgrade that will take Hong Kong into the next era, which is exciting for anyone who follows overseas racing.
So a nice break now for everybody involved in the Hong Kong racing scene, trainers, jockeys, owners, administrators and journalists like yourself, with the new season resuming on the 2nd of September.
That's right. So the break is actually becoming shorter and shorter, but it is a fantastic element of the Hong Kong racing season, this break, this six-week break, where it's mandated by law that they can't race between, I think it's the 16th of July and the 1st of September. So now coming back the 2nd of September, and it's going to be an exciting season indeed. But the thing is, everyone returns, say, mid-August, and they're very refreshed, they're ready to go. So definitely a positive of the Hong Kong racing calendar.
How many seasons have you done there now, Andrew?
I've been there five seasons now. It's flown. That's my sixth season in Hong Kong. So it's quite something. It feels like yesterday I moved up there. But look, time flies, and especially when you're having fun like I am up there.
It's that sort of place. Such is the pace, Andrew.
Most definitely. Look, it's a very intense environment, and it's an intense environment for anyone. Hong Kong racing. Look, they only do race twice a week. But the intensities of the product, you've got so much scrutiny. It holds such a place in Hong Kong culture and in the Hong Kong news cycle that it's something that really you never get a break from it until you get to this off season. So it's definitely something that is needed for jockeys, trainers, and as you say, journalists like myself.
How's your Cantonese these days?
Not very good. Not very good. I know enough to be able to speak taxi driver Cantonese. I can talk to a taxi driver and say Palma Day, Sha Tin Macham, which is Happy Valley and Sha Tin Racecourse, respectively. But apart from that, not so good.
Well, Goisai, Andrew.
I'm Goisai. That's it.
That's Andrew Hawkins joining us on Talking Horses for a review of the recently concluded Hong Kong racing season. Lovely to have Vicky Leonard as a special guest on Talking Horses this week. Vicky is a real mover and shaker in the thoroughbred breeding and racing world these days. She's just finished a seven-year stint with Arrowfield as their marketing manager and branched out on her own to do various things, including head up the launch of the TDN here in Australia. That's set for launch on the 15th of August, which is a great asset for the Australian racing industry. Vicky, how are you this morning?
Very well, thank you, Jo.
Tipping, you've been pretty busy of late.
Yeah, it's been a busy couple of weeks since finishing up at Arrowfield, but it's exciting. You know, the future's bright and I'm excited to be part of it.
Well, firstly, looking forward to welcoming the TDN into this part of the world.
Yeah, I mean, they're a publication with a great reputation in the international breeding and racing scene. They've got an amazing editorial staff, so it's great to have the Thoroughbred Daily News down here. And the team there I've been quite close to for a number of years, largely through being a reader and a advertiser with Arrowfield. So it's awesome to be now working with them because I know it's a fantastic product and it's already got so much respect globally, and I know that the Australian and Kiwi racing professionals will really find it a valuable addition to their lives.
Of course, many people down under already subscribe or follow the TDN, but now there will obviously be more of a focus by that outlet on the things that are happening in this part of the world.
Yes, exactly. So we've employed two full-time riders down here, Paul Vertese, who's based in New Zealand, and Bruno Bryan, who's based in Australia. These guys will every day be on the lookout for the most important racing and bloodstock news to be delivering. We've also got Kelsey Riley, who's quite familiar to the audiences down here. She is a regular writer for the TDN, but often comes down and covers our yearling sales and our major racing carnivals. So Kelsey's going to have a far more active role. Half a week will be on our content. And then we've got a pretty awesome lineup of freelance writers to really hone into some of the more human interest pieces on the backstories behind the horses and the people involved, get into some quite deep analysis on stallions, on sales, look for trends and where the industry's heading in the future. And then one of the things that I've always personally loved about the Thoroughbred Daily News is their ability to source great opinion on industry issues and dissect them properly, but with a real bloodstock slant to it.
Well, Vicky, certainly issues in the industry were a focus recently on the ABC's Four Corners report. Frankly, I found the whole story a bit of a letdown based on the lead-up hype. What were your thoughts on it?
Yeah, very similar. I thought it was just dreadful journalism, to be honest. The story just seemed clunky and didn't have a lot of weight to it, which is quite relieving, really. If they weren't able to pull together a decent storyline, it shows it was more clutching at straws than anything. So it gives me a lot of confidence that, we really can step up and start to position our industry properly in the eyes of the public.
Well, Vicky, you've been very passionate about that for some time now, and last year you launched a fantastic blog series. Where is that at the moment, and will there be anything that branches off from that whereby you'll be contributing to the industry with guidance in marketing and promotion?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm really lucky that whilst I've got TDN's a major project, I'm setting up Kit Collective, which is a marketing agency for businesses within the industry. And under that banner will also come a organisation not-for-profit. We're calling it Thoroughbred 21, which is to position thoroughbred racing for the 21st century. And we're really looking there to push out a lot of content pieces and stories that help to drive people to our industry instead of pushing them away from it. The general public do tend to only see the negative things because, of course, that's what sells. But there's so much behind the scenes that we can be doing and really pushing that out to a broad audience. Companies like Godolphin already do an awesome job. And so if we can amplify what they do and some of the content they're producing, you know, it's just better for everyone.
A big announcement during the week from Racing New South Wales in relation to the Everest and the undercard of racing that sits behind that.
Yeah, massive result. It's so great to see, you know, Peter really trying out some new innovations, and he looks to the country and really makes sure that they're well looked after, which is so important. It's the backbone for everything. So, but it's great, you know, that we're trying new things. It's, you know, it's an industry that we are very traditional, and there's a lot to be said for tradition, but there's also a massive place for innovation. So it's great that Peter's willing to give it a crack, and, you know, love or hate what he does, it has everybody talking about it all the time. A day doesn't go by where I don't have a conversation with somebody about something to do with Everest. So, you know, you can love or hate the concept, but, you know, it's pretty awesome for what it's doing for the sport.
And another horse confirmed for the race this week, Minari.
Yeah, Minari is a brilliant race horse. Obviously, a, you know, great summer schnitzel. So he's had a few trials and tribulations lately, but clearly very fast, and it'd be great to see him back.
Yeah. So how are you enjoying the early days of being your own entrepreneur now? Vicky, you've rubbed shoulders and worked for some of the best in the business. It must be very exciting to be able to step out into your own space now in the industry.
Absolutely. And I'm very aware that one of the reasons that I'm able to do so is because I worked for, you know, an organisation such as Arrowfield and was afforded the opportunity to meet so many amazing people in the industry because of that connection. So it's opened up a lot of doors for me, and it's helped me showcase my work on an international stage. On a day-by-day basis, I'm still sort of finding my feet a little bit, to be honest. Just organising my day and getting a team together. Had a graphic designer that I've worked with for a number of years. She's come on board. She's actually based in the United States, so it's quite good working in time zones. And then getting a few rate research team members and some marketing assistants on board. So we're getting there, but it's fun. It's certainly different.
Mm. And where is Kick Collective based?
So we're up, our main office is at Darlinghurst in Sydney. We'll be obviously in the Hunter a lot and at all the major racing events. And so we're predominantly based in Sydney.
Mm. And as far as the TDN launch goes, should any of our listeners wish to start subscribing to it or following the TDN down under, what should they do?
Well, we've got social media handles all live, so that's just at TDNAUSNZ, TDNAUSNZ. And the website, at the moment, it's just a placeholder site. On there, there's the capacity to sign up. So it's tdnausnz.com.au. So you can sign up there and subscribe, and you'll get the first one in your inbox on August the 15th. We're in the process at the moment of developing a mobile-optimised platform for this, which will allow readers to really easily digest the news while they're out and about, and also offer some quite interactive and engaging options for advertisers beyond just submitting a JPEG. We'll be able to do a lot with video and photo galleries and HTML adverts, so it's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it certainly is. It's wonderful for the industry here. We'll be much better informed about what's happening in our own backyard and across the ditch in New Zealand, but also it's going to better showcase the industry here to the Northern Hemisphere.
Well, exactly. The Thoroughbred Daily News has a great reputation internationally. So the stories that we'll be producing here will be picked up by their American and European editions. So that'll mean that we get a lot of coverage in those markets, which is particularly important as our Thoroughbred product gets a lot more international. We've got so many buyers coming down now for the English Easter sales and the Magic Millions, and for them to be, you know, more informed on, you know, our bloodlines, what's happening and who's producing the best horses, who the top trainers are and who's coming through, it's great for them to get that promotion on an international stage.
Mm, fantastic. Well, Vicky, congratulations on getting that up and running, and we look forward to its launch in the middle of next month. And all the best with Kick Collective too. Looking forward to seeing what influence it can have positive on the sport here.
Thanks, Joe. I really appreciate it.
Vicky Leonard, making plenty happen in the Australian racing and breeding industry, media and marketing space at the moment. Keep an eye out for the TDN, which launches next month here in Australia. Many of our regular listeners, I'm sure, would have heard the rather distinctive advertisements of Swettenham Stud that have been playing out in recent months, and they carry the dulcet tones of Sam Kekovic, who's promoting a concept called Foal Share, Whole Share. If you're wondering what it's all about, we're going to find out more with Swettenham Stud's Sam Matthews this morning. How are you, Sam?
Very well, thank you, Jo. How are you?
I'm excellent, thanks. Well, I found the ads certainly very catchy and entertaining, but really keen to get a better understanding of what this is all about. It seems like a fantastic concept to get more breeders involved.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's great to have Sam Kekovic helping us out. Obviously, a easily identifiable voice that booms through your radio, so he's a great one to have on board. And the reason we sort of bought in the Foal Share, Whole Share was we noticed there's quite a few of the sort of smaller to mid-sized breeders that were really struggling to get the right sort of horses and, you know, go to those nicer stallions and get a result. And, a few stats came out recently that, you know, 350 small breeders, or about 10% of the market, have dropped off in the last few years. And we wanted to make sure, particularly in Victoria, that we were able to look after the breeders that have supported Swettenham. So we introduced the Foal Share, Whole Share offer. And that basically consists of Trust in August, Rebel Dane, Passant Saloon and Americaine. And anybody who wants to send a mare to any of those stallions, send them along. We'll get them in foal, and there's nothing payable. Once those mares foal down, the breeder has 14 days to decide what they'd like to do. If they'd like to keep the horse, that's the whole share. They just simply pay the service fee, and that horse is all theirs. Or if they'd like to go foal share, they hold on to it. They don't pay any service fee, take it through to weanling stage. They'll sell it at a public auction unreserved. We'll go them halves in the sales entry cost, halves in the commission, and halves in whatever it makes. So it really allows them to make an educated decision on their progeny once they've had a look at it, rather than buying out a typical foal share, which would be while it's still in utero.
How challenging, though, is it to make a decision on the likely future of that horse within 14 days of it being born?
Yeah, I think the astute breeders out there really have an eye for it. And, you know, I know when our foals are being born, you really can look at them and think, wow, this one's going to be fantastic. And we really want to back our stallions in to say that most people will probably be doing that. But it does give them the option that if they do get something that's a little bit backward, or for whatever reason they would like to go ahead and sell it, that they're not up for that service fee early on. And then hopefully that grows and matures into being a magnificent weanling and everybody wins. But we're very, very confident that with these four stallions that they'll get a great result. And once it's born, that people will be very happy with it and happy to pay the service fee.
And Sam, what's been the take-up rate of this?
Yeah, it's been incredible. We released it probably about 6 weeks ago, and it's just been, the phones have been ringing hot with people, and the main question from people has just been, what's the catch? You know, why are you doing this? And there's no catch, there's no small print in the contract. It's to give back and to give people a great opportunity, and people understand that, and people have really bought into it, and, you know, we're seeing some fantastic mares that people aren't too sure what to do with, that they haven't made that decision yet, but they really come through and we can help them out to make that right decision. So it's been better than we expected, and it continues to get stronger and stronger as people are made aware of it.
Which of the stallions that have been offered up as part of this program have been the most popular?
I think, given they're all at different stages, obviously Americaine's got three-year-olds going through, so we've seen quite a few of the people with Americaines out there that have said, I'd like another one, and if I get the same sort of type, then let's go ahead with that. Obviously, Passant Saloon, he's got rising two-year-olds, so a few of the people that have booked in have actually got Passant Saloons in their yard and broken in and are in work, so it's great to hear the feedback from them. The Rebel Dane, obviously, his oldest are in utero, so people have sort of said it's less of a risk if we do it this way without having any progeny out there. And obviously, Trust and Augusta sold very well and throwing magnificent types. So they've all been taken up incredibly well. And a lot of people just come to us and say, what I'd like to do is I'd like to send a mare. Can you let us know which of the four stallions suits us best? So it's more about us giving them a bit of advice on what we think is best for them.
And it's that time of the year coming up, Sam, stallion time, and you've got a couple of big guns heading down under to stand another season at Swettenham. Highland Reel, his arrival much anticipated, and, of course, Toronado, who'll be entering his fourth season.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're both in quarantine overseas at the moment, just about to make the trip over. And, we can't wait. They've both been incredibly well-received this year. Harlan Real is you know, probably the hottest talent that we've announced in a fair period of time, and he's getting very close to having a full book. And Toronado, just given his feats of his progeny up on the racetrack in Ireland and the UK already, you know, he's had fourth in a stakes race already and quite a few winners. They've just been so happy to book straight back into them. And we've been overwhelmed and very, very happy with the support we've had from both Victorians and out-of-staters as well.
And Sam, Toronado's got 132 rising two-year-olds scattered throughout Australia. What's the word around the barns at the moment about these young horses?
Yeah, the breakers have obviously given us some fantastic feedback, but the most positive feedback that we get is when somebody who's purchased a Toronado sends that mare straight back to him, and you sort of say to him, yeah, it's obviously going quite well. And you get a bit of a sheepish grin or a bit of a giggle back, and they say, yeah, it's going very, very well. So I think we've got about 35 of them are actually returns from the first year. So people coming back from the first year because he's done so well, and they've already seen the progeny and how well they're moving and how well they've broken. So it's just fantastic to see that. And people don't often give too much away, but we've seen a couple of videos and heard from a few people, and we're very excited to see him hit the track in the next few months.
And Sam, Rebel Dane's first foals are coming soon. What's the anticipation around that been like?
Yeah, we're very much looking forward to it. Obviously, it's an exciting time anytime you've got the first foals being born of a new stallion. So he was the dual Group 1 winner, magnificent-looking horse, and hopefully if they throw to him, they'll be beautiful, big, strong horses just like he is. So we are very much looking forward to it, and we've actually got a couple on the farm that will be falling down relatively early, so the market will get to see them quite quickly, and we'll obviously make sure that everyone gets to see them as soon as they're out.
And how have bookings been to him for this season?
Yeah, very strong. Yeah, I think last year he was just off the track, and it took him a little bit to sort of get that momentum, but he got some nice mares last year, and there's been an incredible response to him this year, particularly through the foal share, whole share offering, where people, without having seen his progeny, are happy to take that risk because move down that path because half the risk is with us. So, he's been incredibly well received this year.
Mm. Sam, stallions are the biggest part of the Swettenham business, but you offer other services as well, and one of those is pedigree analysis.
Yeah, it's something that obviously the Sangster family has worked through over many, many years, and Adam myself and the team have got an incredible pedigree analysis tool that we use, and we've sort of opened it up this year to the market and just said, if anybody wants to run their mares through our analysis tool, we're more than happy to run it through and just let you know that, look, if this was one of our mares, this is what we would do. And it just gives you that independent advice that, you know, if you'd like for us to do it, we're more than happy to run it through. And I think so far we've completed about 420 sets of pedigree analysis for people, and just given them our independent analysis that, look, if this mare was ours on the farm, this is where we'd be sending her, and here's why. And people have really appreciated that because obviously you've got bloodstock agents out there that do an incredible job, but we just thought it's a free way for us to assist people and give them our opinion that does give them an independent analysis with some facts behind it.
Mm. And you've also recently been very proactive in encouraging clients to keep brood mares on farm.
Yeah, look, we've got 900 acres of beautiful farmland and perfect paddocks, and we just feel that needs to be used. We'd like to offer that to our clients a little bit more. Last year we had about 150 mares on the farm, and this year we'd like to get a few more and really allow our breeders the best opportunity, which we believe we've got one of the best farms in Victoria, perhaps in Australia, and just give people that opportunity to have the mares. We've got Dr. John Hurley on the farm who runs about 92% fertility on farm mares, and they get incredibly well looked after at a beautiful property, walk straight to the stallion. You just couldn't have a better combination. Walk-ons, we obviously welcome walk-ons, and we also just offer a walk-out service, but we just want to make sure that these mares are getting the best opportunity.
And your open day is coming up very soon?
It is. It's going to be on the 19th of August, and that'll kick off at 10:30 a.m. And then once we're finished sort of around 11:30, 12 o'clock, people can head down to Darley and they kick off about 12. So, yeah, it's great to have the relationship with Darley where we can sort of partner up with them and people can sort of hit two studs on the same day. And we've obviously got Mitchelton across the road and people can duck over there for a glass of wine afterwards or before if they feel the need.
Sam, thanks for joining us on Talking Horses.
Thanks so much, Joe.
Sam Matthews from Swettenham Stud with lots to update us on. And that's all we've got time for on this week's edition of Talking Horses. Hope you enjoyed the program. Thanks to our special guests this week, Andrew Hawkins, Vicky Leonard, Sam Matthews and Harry Mitchell. Until next time, take care. Bye for now.